Blog Talk Radio.
Did you know that elders and others are losing their rights to liberty and property? Anyone can petition a court to have a person deemed incapacitated. What if that person is you? The adult guardianship system was created to protect incompetent people and their assets. A court-appointed guardian, sometimes a total stranger, can force you into a nursing home and sell your home to pay for services. Treasured belongings can disappear as you are drugged and isolated from loved ones. Why does this happen? Unfortunately, the courts don't have the funding to supervise and audit cases. A guardian makes all decisions on your behalf, taking control of your assets with little accountability. The potential for abuse is frightening. Luckily, not all guardians exploit those under their care, but when they do, there's really nowhere to go for help. The National Association to Stop Guardian Abuse, NASGA, is working to reform adult guardianship to return it to its once noble purpose of protecting the human rights to life, liberty, and property and ending financial exploitation of assets. Are you or your loved ones protected? To learn more, visit stopguardianabuse.org.
Good evening, everyone. That was a public service announcement from NASGA, National Association to Stop Guardianship Abuse. We thank them for letting us use their commercial. Anyway, today is, September 28th. Okay, I got my calendar already changed here. September 29th, 2021. You are listening to Face Us Radio on the Hidden Truth Revealed channel on Blog Talk Radio, The Inside Scoop. My name is Luann Fleming. I am one of your co-hosts tonight. I also have Hillary that is with us tonight. I'm going to put her mic live. Hold on a second. Hillary, you're with us tonight.
Hi, everyone. Good evening, and I wish we didn't have to do this radio show, but there is a purpose for this radio show, and that is to, most importantly, help victims of guardianship abuse throughout the country and to stop guardianship abuse that happened to my father 3.5 years ago and Luann's mother, and it's still happening today. So there is a need, and I will thank for Luann and Robin and I and Marcy. We'll thank all of our listeners throughout the country. We're grateful that you're listening, and justice for all. Thank you.
There you go. Thanks, Hillary. She is one of our co-hosts that comes on with us every Wednesday night. We also have Robin Austin is with us tonight. Robin, say hello to everyone.
Hi, everybody. So glad you could join us. I think we have a stellar lineup for our show tonight. I think you're really going to enjoy this, and it is a very important and significant show, as pretty much all of them are, but this one is really one you want to tune in for. Take notes, listen up, because this is an intense story we're about to tell.
Right, and we also have Marcy Friedman with us. She has called in. Let me see if I can get Marcy live on the air with us as well. She's also an advocate down in Florida, same as Hillary. In fact, they just were together doing the Guardianship Task Force down there with our guest that's coming on tonight. We're going to be talking about their conversations that they had. So I want everybody that's coming on the radio tonight, if you're not speaking, please mute your phones if you can when you're not speaking, because remember, it will pick up everything you're doing, and I tell you, it will do everything you're doing on there, so you got to be careful so you're not cooking or frying or doing something out there. So anyway, I just want to let you know that. Hillary or Marcy, you're with us, right?
Yes, I am, and thank you, Luann and Robin and Hillary for the opportunity to express my voice, my opinion, and our constitutional rights, which has been pretty much shredded, ignored, and I guess sabotaged in the court system because there is unbelievable amount of victims in America, because this is an American issue. It is nationwide, of undue process, not transparency, injustice, not the ability to associate with our loved ones, our parents, our elderly parents. My mother just passed away. I buried her 2 weeks ago. isolation when a daughter and a mother that wanted to see each other so badly were not allowed to and had to be supervised and I had to pay. All those things are violations of human rights. They are violation of the Constitution of the United States, and it is the law of the land. We have to be able to have the freedom to see our parents, and this is why our parents, including Ray Contreras, left Cuba for the Constitution of the United States. Because
right.
we will be able to, for a better life, for freedom and justice for all. So thank you so much for, since my mother has passed, she has given me the spirit of go get them. You speak your
there
mind
you
because
go.
That's
oh,
what
that's how
brought
I,
you
I,
to the United
yeah.
States of America.
Yeah, I feel the same way since my mom passed last year and she was guardianized as well. And we were isolated from my mother for 3.5 years. I finally got my mom back, and then I became the co-guardian with my other sister. And we took care of my mom, and we got to be with her during her passing. And then I had to settle with the public administrators, too, with the estate and all that was going on. Got a very small contribution to our family, which, you know, in my reality, in my world, our property and our lives were stolen. Okay, I'm just going to say what it is. Because when you have all that written down in a trust, a will, there is no reason for any court or anybody to come into your life, take your parents away, and then say, we get their property, and you guys, you're all going to get restraining orders. So I just want our listeners to know,
yeah.
the Newport Radio, please listen in very carefully. We have a really good guest coming on tonight. We also have Rick Black. Yes, Rick Black will be joining us in probably about 40 minutes or so, so stay with us. He's also one of them top advocates out there. He runs the SEER. He's got an amazing amount of what was it? He has over. Come on, talk, Robin. I get so excited. I can't even talk about.
Rick Black is an advocate without peer, except maybe Hillary Hogue.
And Marcy.
But Rick Black is an amazing advocate who has fought for rights for people for years, since his mother got caught up into a bad situation with the probate courts. And he is absolutely just, it's stunning the amount of people that he's helped and the amount of work that he's done in this field. So it's always an honor and a privilege whenever we get a chance to have Rick Black on our show. So I'm really eager to have a conversation.
Right, and actually, Robin and Gwen, it was Rick's father-in-law, his wife's father, Terry, her father, who was being exploited, and that was in Vegas, and Rick Black was instrumental in getting April Parks and quite a few others held accountable. And I knew a little bit about our guest, his father and mother's nightmare, but it was quite something when at the task force, Ray Contreras mentioned Nevada, where Rick, you know, where Rick and his wife's nightmare was. So, you know, there's always some connection, and out of all the people that showed, there should have been more at the task force meeting in Tallahassee, but it is a long, in my New York English, it is a long-ass drive. All the people that were there, Ray Contreras is there, and I said to many, many people before I even met Ray that the case concerning his stepfather and his mother is one of, if not the worst and the most corrupt cases that I have ever seen, regardless of what state. So again, I give his mother a lot of strength, a lot of credit for her strength. And also Ray is an only child, and he's like us. He's a fighter, and he's doing it for justice for his mother and also for his father that died in a fraudulent guardianship at the hands of a corrupt probate court and members of that court, the guardians, the attorneys, the healthcare people, the examining committee members, you name it. So, again, we're very lucky to have Ray and, of course, Rick Black and, of course, Marcy, Robin, and Luann. We're grateful.
Thank you, Hillary.
Thank you, Hillary.
Thanks, Hillary. We have a lot to talk about tonight. Hillary was actually just on the news not too long ago. I didn't get time to pass it around yet, but I'll post that on Families Against Court Embezzlement, Unethical Standards, Face Us. That's up on Facebook. You can go there and join in, and I put everything up there that we talk about, guardianship abuse, conservatorship abuse, anything about courts we post on there that are coming up. So you can go on there if you want, join, and you can also go to Blog Talk Radio and go to Hidden Truth Revealed, and you can see all of our shows that are recorded, archived there. We've got almost 300 shows that we've done on this topic, so you can go there anytime. And remember, we're going to have a really loaded radio show tonight, so if that happens and we start talking on top of each other, I'll call it your name to speak, okay? And our show is already getting really full tonight. And remember, if you want a spot on the radio show just to listen in, our shows have gone like international. So you might want to call in a little bit early to the show, and that will reserve your spot to listen in for the night. And sometimes if they get too busy, you can get bounced out. So just call back in if that happens. Once in a while, that will happen to one of our hosts. They'll get bounced out and have to go back in, but hopefully that doesn't happen tonight.
And that number is 845-241-9962 to call in.
Mm-hmm.
And if during the question and answer period or comment period after our guests, we'll usually have a question and answer comment period. And if you wish to make a comment, dial in 845-241-9962 and push a 1, and that will raise your hand and let us know that you would like to join the conversation.
Right, exactly. So let's get started with the show tonight. I'm going to tell you a little bit about our guest first. His name is Ray Contreras, and he's 41 years old. His stepdad, Pete Beatty, was forced into guardianship in Lake Wales, Florida, Polk County. 9 months later, he died, alone, without his wife and family. The estate is worth over $100 million. And then also Ray Contreras and Marcy Friedman were also featured in a YouTube, and they are the children of the first generation Cuban refugees guardianship. They were the speakers at the Guardianship Improvement Task Force, and they did a really awesome video to talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
So I also posted that up on our segment up there, and Families Against Court Embezzlement and Ethical Standards Basis. You'll be able to see that up there. But let me see. Ray said he's not a lawyer, but works in the legal field for 10 years, assisting large Florida law firms compiling data using technical platforms, and there's more to that, so he can talk about that if he wants. His passion is computers and technology, but after experiencing violations of civil rights, he made a career change to help the innocent abused by the system. So we are going to welcome Ray Contreras our show tonight. Let me get him on. He is right in here. Hold on a second. Ray, are you with us?
Yes, yes. Thank you so much for the intro. It's a beautiful, beautiful program. And thank you so much, Hillary and Marcy, for the nice words. And I appreciate you referencing it as the most corrupt case you've ever heard of, because that's how I feel.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm here as a victim. You know, I'm here. You know, just to help everybody. And, you know, it was nice, you know, getting in the car at 4 a.m. from my house and driving all night to be in Tallahassee by 9. But once I got in the room and saw there was fellow people with me, you know, I really felt a lot better. You know, I can tell you my nerves, you know, inside definitely came down knowing that I wasn't alone in this. Because a lot of people go into this completely in the dark. You know, they've never heard what a guardianship is or a conservatorship or anything like this, you know, and you know, things like Alzheimer's are the number 6 leading cause of death in the United States right now, and so there's going to be more and more cases like this, and people need to be informed on what's happening.
Right.
That's
definitely.
They take advantage of the Alzheimer's patients because they don't have a short-term memory, so they make them sign, and they suffer agitation, and they suffer psychosis, but they do have the long-term memory that they remember, and that's why they isolate them. My mother was one of them. So imagine if there is, what did you say, six leading causes of death, you said? Well,
yes,
pretty much, I bet you those with Alzheimer's and dementia, they have died, and guardianship, I would be very interested to know what that percentage would be, and I bet you it's a large one.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's
a scary time we're living in.
Yeah, it's definitely a scary
time. And the violation of the Constitution of the United States and the due process and nobody above the law, that is the law of the land that they're not paying attention to.
That's my favorite line, law of the land. I'm going to talk about law of the land a lot tonight because that's one of my favorite things that lawyers like to swing around.
That's
a great topic.
This is going to be really good. And like I said, Rick Black is going to be joining us in about 40-45 minutes. So tell us, first of all, Ray, how you got involved. How did your stepdad get into guardianship? And I know that you also have another father, and they both were from Cuba, right?
Well, no. Let me correct a few things. First of all, I grew up with two fathers, you know, my biological father and then my stepfather. He was married to my mom for many years. They did divorce in 2008, but they reconciled as far as they got back to living together. They never remarried, but they stayed together, and they lived as husband and as wife. So I wanted to correct that from the beginning.
Okay, good.
And they stayed together until this guardianship thing, you know, started, basically. And, you know, the nice thing about, you know, one thing I'm lucky to say is, you know, a lot of kids, you know, come from homes where they're broken and they have, you know, step-parents. But the nice thing, what I found with my father and my stepfather was that I learned values, you know, from two sides. You know, my real father was a mechanical engineer, electrical engineer from Cuba. He was a naval officer. My mom, her name is Doris Beatty. In Cuba, it was Doris Hernandez. She was the first woman to ever become an officer in the Cuban military communist government. I mean, under Fidel Castro, she was the first woman. I mean, she was on newspapers. They treated her like the Amelia Earhart. They used her as propaganda to get more women to join the military. My parents have been around the world on the as part of the Merchant Marines Cuba had. You know, Cuba would leave, you know, with their ships full of sugar, and they'd go as far as China, Soviet Union, parts of the Europe, you know, basically everywhere but the U.S., you know, because of the embargo. And in return, they'd come back with, you know, products from those countries. You know, they'd come back with rice, say, from China, or they'd go up to, you know, Germany. And, you know, my parents, you know, fell in love during that time, you know, during the cold, you know, the Cold War and you know, the Cuban relationship with the Soviet Union, where my father and my mother went to school, you know, with Soviets, basically. And a lot of the food that they ate was from Russia because that's all they had there. And, you know, it's a story where they immigrated to America. I was born in Jersey as soon as they got here. I was almost born back in Cuba had it not been for them escaping. They used their position of power to escape. I mean, because they were both officers of the military, they kind of used it as a tool, and they escaped in Europe and went on the run and then eventually sought political asylum through the Jimmy Carter administration and was able to fly them here, and I was born. My mom was pretty pregnant with me when she flew here to America. So, you know, they came here with nothing. You know, just your education, no degree, no piece of paper. My dad talked about when he started working, you know, when job hunting, he didn't know much English, but since he was a mechanic, you know, electrical mechanical engineer, he went to go work at the Rosoni pasta factory in Manhattan. And here he told me a story where the boss just told, you know, moved him around the machines and said, can you do this? And my dad would just do it, you know, because he knew how. He didn't know how to talk much, but he knew how to get things going, and he got the job. And within a year or two of being in this country, you know, my parents had a car. They had a pretty nice place to live. Wow. They had enough money saved up that they moved to Miami. I mean, they moved to Miami. Well, they went on vacation to Miami for 3 months because they had so much money saved up, and they decided they liked it so much, they decided to stay. My dad took on a second, you know, my dad bought a typewriter, started, you know, my mother helped him make a resume, and sure enough, he got his second job in America, and he kept that second job until he retired 33 years later. So my father in America has only had two jobs. My mother, she went into the construction business with my stepfather in 86. And, you know, my parents split up. And my mother was pretty much behind all the big construction in Miami, from the, you know, pro player stadiums, back then it was called Joe Robbie Stadiums, to all the big Lennar Holmes projects that were going on, Adrian Holmes. I mean, as a kid, it was interesting because, you know, she was the only woman in the field. You know, she was working in Okeechobee Road in Miami, which is a really tough part of town where it's just all truckers and dirt flying everywhere. And you see her little Honda Civic coming out of there, and all the truckers are always waving at her because she was one of the only women in the field. Her and my stepfather built up this company. It was a rock quarry. I mean, as a kid, you're trying to explain to your friends what your mom does, and I'm like, she works selling rocks. I mean, it's a rock quarry. But it was a small rock quarry that became so profitable that the competitors, like Rinker or CSX, maybe you might have heard of that, tried buying them out, and eventually they got bought out by White Rock. Part of the deal was my mom came with the merger. They didn't want anybody but my mother. And, you know, so I learned a lot. You know, I learned a lot from my stepfather as far as business. You know, he taught me what it means to shake someone's hand. The first time I met my stepfather, I shook his hand real softly, and he immediately corrected me. You know, I'm 6 years old, and he's like, no, when you shake a man's hand, you shake it good and firm. And, you know, a lot of fathers, you know, maybe slip on lessons like that. But, you know, like my father never taught me much about handshakes. You know, Pete taught me about, you know, looking people in the eye. And, and when you give someone your word, you mean it, you know. And that little lesson with the handshake and just giving someone your word and meaning it, that's what really helped me work with all these law firms. Because law firms, they're real, you know, uptight as far as, you know, signing contracts and, you know, and you know, paperwork. And when they worked with me, they always knew that if they shook Ray's hand, Ray would get the job done, you know. And and the other nice thing was that because of my stepfather was so wealthy, I always felt comfortable talking to people in power very easily. Like, I didn't mind telling them the truth, no matter what the truth was. I knew they would appreciate that. And so it was interesting having two fathers growing up, that I got to see life through, you know, on one hand, my father's telling me I need to fix my own car. And on the other hand, my stepfather's telling me, you know, stick with your commitments as far as business, you know, don't back down from a fight, you know, stand up for what you believe in. And it doesn't matter how big people are, you know, like you have a right to get justice. So, I mean, I use those values every day. I mean, I truthfully, when I shake someone's hand, I can't help but think of him every time I shake someone's hand. It just happens.
And, you know, let me interrupt you, Ray. I only met you one time, maybe another time. I can just tell that your parents, your mother, your both of your father, man, they've done well. They've done really good because you are just like everyone. Everyone should be, you know, you're a nice guy. You're well-spoken, you're smart, but more than anything else, you're fighting for your family, for your mother, and for your father, your stepfather. And it would have been easy for you to walk away and say, look, it is what it is, just let's let it go. But you are doing exactly what both of your fathers would want, and that's fighting for justice for your family. So it's very – the whole backstory and the way that you're living your life and respecting those values is really commendable.
Yeah.
And I want to say something. I want to mention something about the handshake. That is such a good Cuban upbringing, because my father used to say to me the same way, a man is worth, the word of a man is worth everything. If you can shake somebody's hand tight and look at them in the eye, you know, but if they can't look at you in the eye, be very weary. Now, I went to court when I went pro se, and I thought, hey, you know what? I didn't do anything wrong. I look at that Judge Lundy's eyes, and I presented true and convincing evidence of my mother's medical report saying that she was not supposed to make independent decisions. And guess what he did? He got up, he threw a pen, and recused himself. And Hillary was there.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that of that, you just brought memories of my dad, because
Marcy,
that is so
Marcy.
True about the handshake.
Marcy, I'm gonna have to disagree with you. I'm gonna have to disagree with you. A pencil, a number two pencil that he just flung. Like,
oh,
so,
I'm so
disrespectful, but Marcy is right. Marcy is another strong Cuban woman. She stands up for her family and for herself. So,
oh yeah,
thank
I'll
you,
tell
honey.
You another funny
you
story.
But no one.
I'll tell you another interesting story. Just so,
strong.
Yeah.
I just want to just give another story about Miami and my mother Doris Beatty. So by the time I was maybe 12 years old, in the rock quarry business, my mother was the kind of person that she'd always give people a chance. Doesn't matter how big the company was or how small, if somebody came to her job and was needed materials, she'd give them credit. You know, if they said, look, you know, I'm doing a job, I need $30,000 credit, you know, to build houses, she'd give people chances. She does that till this day. I mean, there's people that she hires to do landscaping or help out around the house that just got out of jail. She doesn't care where you come from. She'll give you a chance. And so as a kid, I remember my mom would give these companies a chance, but then there was times where they wouldn't pay the bill. And what my mother would do, which I've never heard of till this day, is that she would get me, because, you know, she was a single mom at that time. She'd put me in the car at dinner time and drive to these houses in some of the worst parts of Miami and knock on their door around dinner time in front of the whole family and say, you know, I'm here for an unpaid invoice. And she would leave me in the car with the car running, a cell phone with the 911 pre-dialed, and a gun under the seat. This was me as a child. I mean, it's kind of embarrassing to admit it, but that's the kind of mom I had. And then if they didn't pay, she would then take me to court with her, sit me on the floor while she would speak, because my mother has a very thick Cuban accent. I mean, you can't mistake it. And she would go by herself without a lawyer and get liens on some of the biggest companies in Miami and shut down their entire construction, you know, job until she got paid. She did that all by herself. You know, so I grew up in a household where women can do anything, you know, and that's one of the points I wanted to talk about tonight, is that there's a big thing going on in the country right now where women, you know, we see what happened. You know, the reason I brought up the Olympics in my hearing is because I still can't get over what happened in Capitol Hill with all those little girls speaking, that no matter how many times they called authorities, no one did anything. I mean, now we have this case where the Gabby case, where someone called in and said, you know, I see a man hitting a girl. You need to send police. The police arrive on the scene with their body cams, and they turn the whole situation and thinking about arresting the girl, even though the 911 caller said that the guy was hitting the girl. I don't know if you guys picked up on that.
I did.
But the body.
I did. Uh-huh.
You know, it's unbelievable. And then now we have this kid on the loose because the police were sleeping behind the wheel. I mean, like, the people that are making the rules aren't following the rules, and they're asleep behind the wheel. And then all of us, you know, we make one mistake in our car, say we veer off the side of the road and hit something or hurt ourselves or hurt others, and it creates this huge paper trail. I mean, all of a sudden we have a ticket, there's dockets on the court, our insurance is going up. I mean, we keep paying for that mistake for a long, long time. And yet these people, you know, whether they're attorneys, whether they're judges, whether they're, you know, inspector generals, whatever it is, they're asleep at the wheel when people are calling in, and they don't get in trouble. And there's no paper trail, and we never know. So, I mean, I filed a complaint with the Florida Bar.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I filed a complaint with the Florida Bar. They didn't think it was a big deal, and now no one else knows what happened. You know, it's like, I think all of us have a right to know how many complaints have been filed to these attorneys, and whether they were legitimate or not, we should know what they are. Like, if we can go to a restaurant and say that, you know, we don't like the food and post it on Yelp or some Google thing, we should have a better way of knowing what these lawyers are doing and what other families have gone through with these lawyers.
And let me interrupt
and not be afraid of repercussion.
Real quick. Mm-hmm. You know, we know these law firms, right? You'll make a complaint. You know that there have to be other complaints, but I don't know what the deal is, and you might know better than I do. I believe that they do pay whatever company it is to expunge those reviews. Because you look
that does exist.
And you know they're evil. You know they have complaints, but it's like five stars. But more so, that's an awesome idea. awesome. We should really see what we could do, you know, to fight the devils at the Florida bar. But the Florida citizens, let's just say Florida, we have a right to know how many bar complaints were filed against Attorney John Smith.
Yeah, exactly. I felt that too.
Yes.
Right.
Because if they don't think it's a big deal for an attorney to bring a gun to a mediation, I mean, who knows what else they don't think is a big deal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, this takes the cake. I mean, if you're showing up at a meeting, whether it's in the Jersey Alley with the Sopranos and $100 million and a gun, I mean, we need to know if more lawyers are doing the same kind of stuff. Because Nevada, they took away a lawyer's license for brandishing a gun in a deposition. I mean, there's a case about it, which is so happens to be the same state that went after April Parks. I mean, it seems like Nevada is doing a lot more to protect their people than they are here in Florida.
Right. Ray, do me a favor. And, Luann, I hope you don't mind. Just tell us, so your dad gets into guardianship, right? It's initiated.
Yeah,
mom thinks that she's going to become the guardian, and the switcheroonie is done. Take us there because we want to get to that mediation, which is down the line.
Yeah,
of course.
Go ahead.
I mean, you know, a lot of times people talk about guardianship and they're very confused on how quickly it can happen. As and you guys know, it happened very, very fast, and it could be at any age.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be an example where, say your great-great-great-grandparents, you know, left you money to go to college. You know, say they left you a $200,000 college fund, you know, and you're excited, you know, you're on campus, you know, you're going to your classes. You buy a place with your girlfriend. The place is yours, but you're living with your girlfriend. And one day you're riding home from school, and you know you have a little accident. You bump your head on the sidewalk, and you're in a vegetative state. You know, say, all of a sudden, a guardianship proceeding can begin. You know, and basically, since you're the only person alive, you know, because the rest of your family is gone, and you have this $200,000, you know, account, this guardian can just start going after it. You know, kick out your girlfriend from your place, sell all your furniture, and by the time you ever do wake up from that coma, I mean, the money's gone. I mean, it could happen at any age. It's not just seniors, you know, and we saw from Michael, which was like killing me being at that Tallahassee conference. I mean, just seeing Michael there was so compelling to me. I couldn't get past it. I'm like, you guys should be ashamed of yourselves that this kid went through this. Like, each and every one of you should resign that this happened to him. Like, that's how much hurt I had inside of me.
Mm-hmm.
And they were still giggling, you know, making little jokes and, you know, playing like little things. And that really got to me. And I think Hillary did a great point where she started calling people out. Like, why are you laughing? Like, this isn't a laughing matter. What's happening here? People are dying every day.
Yeah. Not a laughing matter.
And they were laughing.
Mm-hmm.
And they were laughing because we saw them on the other side that we were.
Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
There's something important. There's something important about my mom's case that that I don't think gets touched on. And I talked to other people, and they agree that it doesn't get talked about. And it's when, you know, you have these medical reports that talk about, okay, we're going to take away your right to vote. We're going to take away your right to drive. We're going to take away your right to marry, you know, and so forth. But they never say we're going to take your right to have firearms in the house. I mean, it's like, you know, I get the Second Amendment and all that. But at some point, if you are not allowed to vote or drive, I mean, shouldn't they start talking about removing firearms? And that's what happened with my mother's case, that the doctors never made that recommendation. You know, so here you have my mom living with someone. You know, she's completely overwhelmed. You know, she's running the business. She's taking care of him. You know, she's calling me, asking me, you know, can you get me blank bullets for the firearms? You know, like questions like that. And I don't have the answer to that. I'm like, I don't know what kind of guns he has. And then you have another side telling him to have the guns. You know, encouraging them to have guns. Oh, no, you need to have all the guns you can. And that's where that's how easy this began. Because then you have a doctor saying, you know, you shouldn't be driving. And my mom's trying to follow the doctor's orders, and he tries to drive. And you guys know what happens next. You know, my mom, you know, tried to stop him and had to call police. And that moment triggered the guardianship. And what's interesting is that, you know, you read some of the laws. I mean, I have the statutes right here. It's like if you went to class and it says Chapter 1, this is what you shouldn't do. I mean, when you look at the statute for procedures to determine incapacity, I mean, it has A, B, C. By the time you get to C, or even B, it'll say something like, any attorney representing an alleged incapacitated person may not serve as guardian of the alleged incapacitated person or counsel for the guardian of the alleged incapacitated person or the petitioner, meaning that the court-appointed attorney cannot have any relation whatsoever with the guardian. I mean, that's,
right.
That's letter C, right? So in my mother's
right.
case, there was already a court-appointed attorney who didn't have a conflict with a guardian. You know, he was some other guy named Curtis, and everything seemed to be going pretty smooth so far. I mean, my mother was, you know, working with all the lawyers, you know, trying to get my, you know, my stepfather back home. She realized that she couldn't live with him by herself, so they were hiring full-time staff. I mean, they were hiring the same people from the facilities. She gave them a job. She was cutting them checks. She was already paying them to come be at the house. The problem is someone at the courthouse, no one knows who, put out the rumor that there was a lot of money involved. And all of a sudden, this original court-appointed attorney, which they say here has to be some sort of like rotating list, you know, it says here, must be made on a rotating basis, you know,
right,
taking consideration conflicts. Exactly, the wheel. So how did this guy get to cherry-pick this case? No one knows. I mean, pretty convenient if you ask me. Get to come in here and all of a sudden nominate your client to be the guardian and ignore what
right.
most lawyers
mm-hmm.
call self-executing documents.
So,
and it's like,
so Ray, let's
you know.
Back up. So Ray, let's back up a second. So you talk about how your mom made one phone call and that's how you ended up into a guardianship. I mean, that's
yeah, she
horrifying.
Made one phone call for help. One phone call for help and said, I'm living alone. And, you know, he tried to drive and he brought out his gun and, you know, I need help. And that's all it took. That's it. After that, it was over.
Wow. And how large
and the thing, and then,
estate,
and then,
so
and then
how large was the estate that it was worth? Big.
I mean, I don't know exact numbers, but all the attorneys were describing it because, you know, I never got involved in my mom's affairs or my stepfather's affairs. You know, I was just a son. You know, like I treated them like family. I wasn't
mm-hmm.
expecting anything at the end. I mean, it's just family. You know, we worked together on some things. For example, my stepfather wanted me to help him protect the ranch. I created a bunch of surveillance cameras at the ranch that kept everything in check, everything guarded. And that's the extent of it, you know. I also put some cameras in their home houses, you know, keep them safe to make sure they were safe at night. But I didn't get involved in the business. You know, I honestly don't want to be a rancher. I don't want to be a farmer. I mean, I have other dreams in my life, and I don't want to follow that path. But but yeah, going back to how this started, I mean, that's how quickly this started was just the issue of that my mother found herself in a position where she didn't know what to do, and it's not like they give anyone a handbook on what to do next.
Mm-hmm.
And,
right.
and what my
let
stepfather
me,
had
right,
was...
Let me, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Let me ask you, how long was Curtis on the case as the court-appointed attorney before Miller took over?
Maybe I mean, I'd have to look at it, but I mean, it might have been
before
maybe
like
3 months, about 3 months. And everything was fine. I mean, you look at the medical reports, you know, all of them were in line with the will. I mean, all the interviews
mm-hmm.
were in line with the will. You know, so you have three different doctors, all their interviews reference the will in the, you know, in the sense of like he's telling them, yeah, Doris takes care of me. I love Doris. I love to be around her. You know, there were questions like, do you need an outfit to help you get through your decision? He's like, no. And that's
mm-hmm.
the thing. You know, you bring all this evidence to the judge, and they just don't care. They don't care how long
yeah.
the will was made for. They don't care if it's from 1994. They don't care how long ago the healthcare surrogate was signed. They just don't care. And that's the problem.
Yeah.
That is a problem.
And, you know, a lot of people go to these attorneys to have their estate documents all done, and they ain't worth a darn anyway most of the time. I mean,
exactly.
I'm sure there's some
they're not, because
across the country that's gone okay, but mine was pretty bad when, you know, when we ended up in probate court, we got nothing hardly, you know. And I'm saying that this case we're talking about was worth over $100 million. And weren't you talking earlier how these attorneys were making $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 the first 6 months or so of the case?
Oh, yeah. Within the first 6 months, I mean, there were millions coming out.
But let me,
I mean, no question.
So at this guardianship task force, I look like an idiot, you know, because I'm Anthony Palmieri, who's the head of, Inspector General, everything guardianship, you know, and he wanted to talk about advanced directives. And I go to the same story about my dad getting up, 2003, you know, getting his power of attorney and his health care surrogate and his will. And all of these attorneys and guardians says, oh, no, that never happened. That is not the truth. And here we have Ray talking about his mother was basically his mother was the trustee. Everything, for the most part, was left to Doris. And then you have this court-appointed attorney, Miller, who goes in and he supposedly he gets Mr. Beatty to sign. I mean, do you even think that that was your father's signature?
Well, the thing is, no, it could have been, but at that point, he didn't know what he was signing, you know? I mean, at that point, you know, it's the games that they play. It's like, I remember visiting him when he was at the facility. They would put up pictures of these attorneys and guardians, and then I try to put a picture of my mom, and they would rip it off the wall.
Are you serious?
Can you believe that? No, not that's serious.
Oh, I've never heard of anything like that.
Oh, yeah.
So, you also talked about, Ray, that your dad or your stepdad was completely isolated and he died by himself, you know.
Yeah, that comes later. That comes later. And we all have those stories, you know, but that definitely comes. But there was another point I wanted to make about the how this whole thing got triggered. It's kind of like you know, like Hillary pointed out in that hearing in Tallahassee, it's like she said flat out, like, don't even bother creating a will. And then like the other side laughed at her, and I'm like, why are you laughing? She's kind of right. You guys don't listen to anything on there. And I was talking to Rick and others, and it's like people get suckered into these lawyers being like, oh, I'm going to charge you so much money to create this trust. But then when you ask them, well, if somebody contests it, are you going to be there to fight for it? And they're no, that's not the case. Yeah. And comparing these probate lawyers to the lawyers that I work with, man, these guys are making way more money than those personal injury lawyers that I know. And I'm talking big personal injury lawyers that I know in Florida. They're not making the kind of money these probate lawyers are. And these probate lawyers are making this kind of money without depositions, without expert witnesses, without a jury. I mean, it's like they're sitting in their underwears from home writing papers, and they're making a killing. I mean, there was one attorney who filed his fee for payments. He just put in like case notes, all the way down. He didn't even say what he was doing.
Man,
it's like they just don't care.
Unbelievable. And Ray, let me just say something really quick. So last night I'm looking and up comes this from Palm Beach. You know, they're looking for a few people to be auditors and investigators for the guardianship system, right? And the starting amount that they are going to pay is $20. And you can, the highest amount that you would ever make in this job of investigating guardianship, like your mothers and your stepfathers and whoever, is $21. Now, guardians start at $40. How much did the guardian in your mom's case, in your dad's case, make?
I think it was around $250 an hour plus all her assistants and assistants.
$250 an hour. This guardian, we don't even know if she graduated high school, and then her assistants, and what she put in was, well, it was like you needed really, you know, extra special powers to really manage this guardian because there was so much money and so much, you know, to do, but she had people working with her, and she got
paid. What's even funnier is that there's notes that you'll see that'll say things like, they'll have a meeting being like, okay, so what's the hierarchy of who does what? Like, they're literally asking each other, so what's your job again? What are you supposed to be doing? Wait, what are you? I mean, it was unbelievable. So, like, if there's a fire, who do we call first? You know, like, oh, if there's an issue. I mean, the nurse was trying to use Publix Instacart to get prescriptions. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
And the thing is, no, you know, Peggy, let's just call her Peggy. Peggy had no experience as an accountant. I mean, we're talking, this is a cattle ranch. This is a huge, huge operation. This isn't like a bodega in the Bronx. This is huge. And here we have a guardian and her little, you know, minions.
taking care of the operation, and the judge.
Well, it gets better. She brought her husband to the ranch, like he was the new ranch manager.
Well, that didn't go too well. No, no, but I mean that's absolutely insane. But what is the court-appointed attorney? What was his reasoning for changing the trust and the will and everything?
He didn't need one. There's been people that I've heard say before. I mean, they just rubber stamp whatever the court-appointed attorney wants. I mean, whatever they want, sure.
Exactly. You know,
there's no reason. It's just whatever you want. Sure, here you go.
It's insane.
I saw that on a case. Yeah, exactly. I've seen this over and over again too. It's unbelievable.
Well, it happens on hundreds of cases that the directives that are in place. You know, people spend thousands and thousands of dollars with attorneys to get wills and trusts all set up and to arrange their prior directives and to have their powers of attorney and their medical powers of attorney. And all of those papers are absolutely meaningless. They're just, you might as well just be using them for kindling because that's all they're worth. They're not really worth the paper they're printed on. Once you get into one of these courtrooms, the judge simply decides, oh, we're not going to honor that at all, and they don't, and that's that. And and what do we do? Well, we do whatever the attorneys in the courtroom want to be done, however much money is there, however they want to divide it up, whoever they want to.
Exactly.
Let's flip a coin. You four attorneys decide which one's going to be the guardian ad litem, which one's going to be the guardian, which one's going to be the attorney for the guardian ad litem, which one's going to be the attorney for the guardian. And then we'll split up the money according to those roles. And then the next time we'll flip a coin again, and somebody else will be the guardian ad litem. Somebody else will be the guardian ad litem.
Yeah.
They go around the circle like a merry-go-round.
The other thing
I noticed in my mother's case, they pick the topic and they go around and around until I said, wait a minute. You guys have been claiming my mother's money. And then, poof. They changed the topic. The other thing I noticed was I had gone to court one time to get some papers, and this guy was in the computer, and he was asking me all kinds of questions. Guess what he was? He was a real estate agent, and that's what he does. He goes into the court to see what properties go to probate so he can see who the attorneys are, and he can offer them money.
Wow.
Okay? That's what he does.
God.
It's a racket. It's a racket, and yet the abusers, the ones that exploit the abuse, isolate, alienate, neglect, are the good guys. The children, the victim, we're all the bad people. And it's okay for the judges to do that. I mean, it should never take that.
Yeah. So I remember something else that I was reading. I was reading things like, you know, people saying, like, I don't argue with common sense. You know, he's like, oh, Your Honor, I don't argue with common sense, like laughing in the courtroom. And then they would say things like, you can't be guardian and trustee at the same time. They started saying, oh, there's some loose case law from who knows where that says you can't be guardian trustee. And then they'll say things like, oh, well, Doris, because you called the police that day, that makes you a victim. And even though she wasn't pressing charges, I mean, she knew this was just part of the condition. They're like, oh, you can't serve as guardian or trustee because now you're a victim, Doris. I mean, the kind of crap they were throwing.
That's crazy.
I mean, they actually started referring to my mother as the bookkeeper. Can you believe that?
The bookkeeper?
Yeah, the book. Because, you know, when my mom met my stepfather, she went in as, you know, she got hired as a bookkeeper, and then they, you know, grew from there. They started referring to her like she was still the bookkeeper from 1986.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you go through this nightmare, like, I remember that, you know, they would say this about me, that I was exploiting, that I was stealing this, that, and the other, that my dad could never live with young children, my sons and I, and this, that, and the other. And then I would get to the point where I'm like, you know something? Maybe they're right. because you hear them freaking badger you. And it gets to the point where you're like, well, maybe they're right. And then something snaps and you're like, no way. This is just not the way that it should be. But, you know, you would think that this would happen like in a big city or something, but I honestly feel it's these little towns, you know, Oshkosh, Minnesota, or Polk County, Bartow, you know, Live Oak. And it's just, you've got, normally you have no one to turn to, but even more so.
But let me tell you, this case, my mother's case, it attracted all the big players of Florida. All the big names, they jumped in this. I mean, the attorneys that are filing petitions to the bar saying that we don't want family members to see the billing anymore, because that's actually actively happening. They're trying to tell the Florida bar that families shouldn't have access to the bills anymore. They shouldn't be able to see invoices, see what the guardian's charging. They're trying to keep those attorneys were on this case. One of those attorneys was pretending to be the mediator in this case, that he was a neutral person. Well, he's like the number one guy in Florida for pro guardianship. I mean, it's unreal.
It is unreal. Ray, tell us about the mediation. Tell us what happened to your poor mother, how she was intimidated.
I mean, basically, this is a system where, you know, this is the U.S. government. I mean, I don't know if you want to call it the U.S. or the state government. I mean, basically, as a U.S. citizen, this government forces you to go to a meeting. It could be anywhere. It could be in the courtroom. It could be in some attorney's office. In this case, it was in someone's office in Bartow. And my mother hired one of the biggest law firms in America, you know, and she was well represented. You know, it's kind of like that saying they say, you know, when they go low, you go high. I mean, my mom's that kind of person. They always go high. They always do the right thing. They're always ethical. You know, they don't play dirty games. And basically my mom showed up, you know, she brought a pen to a gunfight is what happened. I mean, I don't know what other ways to put it.
Terrible.
I mean, her lawyer showed up there to do what they were supposed to do. And here's a man walking around with a gun. I mean, I have the statute for brandishing a gun. Let me see if I can pull it up real quick. Brandishing a weapon.
Just so sad. Just absolutely devastating. Devastating how we're intimidated by these criminals. They're not exactly.
Here, I have the statute now. The 2021 Florida statute for weapons and firearms. It says 790.10. Improper exhibition of a dangerous weapon or firearm. If any person having it carrying any dirk, sword cane, firearm, electric weapon, or device, or any other weapon shall, in the presence of one or more persons, exhibit the same in a rude, careless, angry, or threatening manner, not necessarily in self-defense, the person so offending shall be guilty of a misdemeanor of the first degree, punishable as, you know, jail. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, as a kid, we knew when we got to kindergarten not to get a plastic knife and put it on our kid next door and ask for his lunch money. I mean, these are lessons that we know as kids.
Right.
The Florida bar.
There you go.
Yeah. I
think
that's a problem.
That is the worst I've ever heard.
You know, the Florida bar never even sent me a closing letter.
Yeah.
They closed
no.
it over a year ago. Never even told me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody. We do have Rick Black joining us. He is with the Center for Estate Administration Reform, Sir Justice, and he will be joining us. He has talked to many, many families across the nation, and we're going to be bringing him on here right about now. If I can get him on, hold on a second. Let me see if I can find him. Rick Black, I think you're with us. I have your line open. Are you? Yeah, okay. Everybody, this is Rick Black. He was a big advocate out there that's been helping many families. He was caught in the probate court cabal as well, like the rest of these families that's been on radio shows. And he actually started the Center for Estate Administration Reform, and he's been joining everybody down in Tallahassee, and he's been helping out a lot of families. So I want to welcome Rick Black to the show, and thank you for coming on.
Hi, Rick.
Yeah.
Hey,
hi,
Marcy.
Rick.
Hey,
Rick.
And our fearless leader, Hillary Hogue.
I don't know if I'm fearless.
We've got the whole crew here. Ray, it's great to hear your voice.
Thank you. I was just finishing up. I mean, if lawyers can bring guns to mediations, man, I mean, it was just a natural progression. I mean, they've been getting away with everything else so far. I mean, it was only bound to happen. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen next. They're going to start harvesting organs. I mean, I don't know what's next on the chopping block for them. But I mean, if you have criminals that get away with everything,
here's the great part, Ray. Their actions are so outrageous now. We're by the day getting closer to the point that law enforcement and leadership will be forced to take action. Otherwise, no one will ever get an inheritance because the courts won't have enough time in a year to adjudicate enough cases. They'll be doing these on mobile units out in parking lots, getting judges to sign orders to put your loved ones in guardianship so attorneys can make a living.
Yeah, man, it's just unreal. Oh, and I want to say something funny about these probate lawyers. Their law firms are so tiny. It's like a secret. Like, they make their little office look like this little cottage, so nice. But yet, they're, like I was saying before, they make more money than most of these PI lawyers that I know. I mean, the kind of money they're bringing in is, but Ray, here's the scary part,
because that was the case. Certainly a decade ago, that was the case almost unilaterally, but now you have Morgan & Morgan getting into it. You got Sheffield Lohman getting into it. You got several big attorney firms down in Miami getting into it, and in other states. I mean, I'm trying to think of the big firm in Richmond, Virginia.
But Rick, I mean, I agree with you, Ray. There's a guy, John A. Williams, right? He basically is in the shadows. He does Medicaid planning. He'll work with the petitioner. So he'll represent a few guardians. You look at his website, it's like a little crack house. It's like a shack. And then you look at his house. I couldn't even pay the electric bill on his house. It's like a 10,000 square foot. So I agree with you. It's that shady to begin with, you know, that they want to just like, put one over on the public, you know? Man,
I mean,
unbelievable.
But
look, we've got to all be cognizant. The big firms are getting into it nationwide. When McGuire Woods, which is where Comey came from, the former FBI director, they are fully indoctrinated into estate trafficking and other probate frauds in Virginia. We got big firms in Florida that are getting into it. It has become entitlement, and that's why, you know, what you did last week, you, Marcy, Hillary, the other 16 activists that came to Tallahassee and made their presence known with the leadership of the Guardianship Improvement Task Force. You know, we need a group like that in every state and a group 10 times that size so that they can't ignore us. I mean, I sat here going on to Instagram and watching the live feeds out there in L.A. today, and here they blocked the whole street off. Looked like they may have had as many as 400 activists out there. Now, granted, not every case is Britney Spears, but I can assure you if we work at building a coalition, being tolerant, being inclusive, and really getting our message out, we could put 400 people in the street in front of the governor's house in Tallahassee and demand, look,
yes,
you got to do something.
And yes, that's
good. We're ultimately going to have to get there, where these atrocities are going to continue to grow because they love our natural desire to not talk about this because it's extremely painful. They like the fact that they can pick us off one by one, and they picked off my family. They picked off your family, Ray, and Marcy, and Luann's, and Hillary's. This is the MO. The great part is we're now talking about it daily, some of us, and so we're learning the tricks of their trade.
Mm-hmm. Definitely,
but the thing is,
And they don't like it. I saw that Judge Campbell, she was not being very patient with Getty. I felt actually very bad because I have been treated with that tone of voice in the courtroom as well. And that doesn't feel nice. And guess what? We're not criminals. They're protecting the criminals. And these judges need to be called on that. That was terrible. She gets elected by the people, and she works for the people. So this is what's going on. It's humiliating. It's degrading to go to a courtroom where you feel like you're going to protect your elder loved ones. They end up dying, like all of us have experienced, except Hillary, thank God. And then you're treated like a criminal because you're challenging them, and you're challenging the side of the law and their constitutional rights that they are violating.
Yeah,
I think that this is cool.
No.
Yeah. No, I mean what I'm picking up is like they're treating us like second class citizens. I mean, look at what happened in South Carolina with that lawyer and the son and the boating accident where he's been 2 years free, and then, you know, I think you guys heard the story. I mean,
basically, that's so reek of cronyism,
yes.
Right?
And
we have a lot of friends. Go ahead.
It's like the courts are more now about not substance, but what your last name is. You know, they don't care whether you have evidence. They don't care how much evidence you have. It's about what's the last name of the people involved. Oh, you got one of the privileged names? Okay, we'll let you go through the system and not get hurt. But if you're a second-class citizen, like, I mean, I'm thinking about – the reason I talked about my mom is and all her accomplishments is because here's an attorney for the Ackerman firm who's worked her whole life. I mean, the stuff that this old lady has done, I mean, she, on her off days, helped find the remains of one of the Navy pilots that got shot down in Iraq during the Gulf Iraq invasion. I mean, she found his remains. It took her 15 years, and she brought it back to the family. That's what she does on the side. I mean, she was city attorney for Jacksonville for over 10 years. She goes to a mediation and she creates an affidavit that she got assaulted with a gun. So did her partner. Her partner, by the way, is the president of the LGBTQ Bar Association for the entire country. And nothing happens. And that's the thing. It's like second-class citizens, it doesn't matter what we say or how much evidence we have or how serious the crime is, they don't care. And they don't give us the same justice as anybody else.
It's a marginal population.
Yeah.
And like Marcy brought up, Cuba. I mean, the reason we left Cuba was because of that. That's what they did to us in Cuba was like, you know, if you're part of the communist circle, you can do whatever you want. But if you weren't, well, then you're starving.
And Ray, this is why I really came out and seek you so we could do that video. And now that I know a little bit more of a background about your mother, about being out there in the construction industry, you know, I worked for the Latin Builders Association as marketing for them, and they are the cream of the crop. So I am sure that your mother knows a lot of the people there, the Leonard Holmes, Rinker, and all those guys.
Yeah.
Well, I sold trucks to them, too. So
Adrian Holmes. Those are all her clients. They would come to her house for Christmas.
We need to contact them and let them know about the story, your story, my story, and what is going on. Because if we can get those people behind our belt, oh my God, they're very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very, very powerful. So I'm sure that we know a lot of the same people. Your mother and I probably know a lot of the same people.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, I'm sure. But
Rick,
but that's the thing. I mean, we're second class citizens. I mean,
yeah. So everybody, let's talk to Rick for a second, Rick Black, and I want to ask him: has there been any positive legislation changes or anything that we can talk about here in Colorado? They want us to come up with some legislative change that could be done. Do you know of anything that looks promising at all?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, in Colorado, there's some easy changes that they could implement that would completely change the horizon. You know, today you do a three-year accounting. You don't do an annual accounting. Most of these proceedings are closed. They should all be opened. Most of the records are sealed. They should all be open. The state could invest, certainly with the programs that the new administration is driving through. There would be federal monies available to completely digitize the system. If you look at Indiana or Nevada, those are the two. Florida, although it's fully digitized, the attorneys are running all around the state sealing cases. So you got a digital system that proclaims public access, but the attorneys get the clerks to seal the records, and then you can't find it. I was looking at the case for Nicholas Krause in Indiana today. He was the fellow who testified yesterday in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and you can find his traffic accident where he was badly injured, but you can't find his guardianship case. But the great thing about Indiana is you plug into one web portal and you can look at every ward in the entire state. And that's, you know, every county, every ward, every attorney. But they obviously have the same prerogative of sealing records, because I couldn't find anything on Nicholas Krause. Colorado is not digitized like many states. North Carolina, South Carolina, it's all paper. Virginia's paper. If you want to research records, you got to go in this state. There's 100 counties. You got to go to each of the 100 counties and beg a clerk who's also the jurist in all guardianship matters to give you the records that would condemn their actions. And you can only imagine what kind of reception you get when you ask someone to give me the proof that you're not doing what you're paid to do. So when I look at Colorado, I would, and I can send this to you, Luann, I would adopt the Bill of Rights that was written into statute in Nevada in 2017, and I would adopt, which they can fund through federal funds, the free, trained, zealous counsel for each ward, proposed ward, prior to any order for guardianship. It's imperative, as we've learned in the Britney Spears case, that these wards have to have counsel. The family members need to have counsel too, but the ward must have zealous counsel that is not conflicted by getting paid by the estate, that they're paid through federal funds. That's what we put in place, and grant funds, but it's federal funds. That's what we put in place in Nevada. So the three things that I would demand in Colorado is digitization of the records, free counsel to proposed wards, and open access to all records. There should be a single database. And let's move the accounting interval down from 3 years to 1 year. All of us balance our checkbooks every month. Why we think that we can put, as Hillary eloquently cited, we put people with no formal education on how to manage money or anything else. We pay them 10 times what they would make in any other job. And then we tell them, you don't have to balance your checkbook once a month. You can balance it once every 3 years. Welcome aboard.
I got one for you, Rick. How about you don't have to balance a checkbook, which is what I'm dealing with right now. How about you quit the job as guardian the same week you take out the ex parte restraining order, and then you still bill the estate for another year and a half trying to balance the account. So you're no longer the guardian, so you have no responsibilities anymore. All it is explaining what you did for the last 6 months. And then when you get to the end, once you realize that you can't really balance the account, then you just say, oops, sorry, bye. And the judge says, okay, you're withdrawn from any future liability. That's what's happening here.
That's right.
They don't have to balance the account.
No, that's, look, when we first exposed this in Nevada in 2014, everybody said I was a fruitcake, didn't know what I was talking about. And I had already researched several hundred cases and knew they weren't submitting inventories, accurate ones. They weren't doing accountings. They had a guardianship compliance officer that the judge was blowing off with every complaint. I mean, April Parks had 150 complaints, and none had never been acted on. Sounds like the Office of Public and Professional Guardianship in the state of Florida.
Right.
And this is what we see nationwide. I mean, when they finally got because we got the attorney general to investigate, we got three judges taken out. There were 36 people freed the week that they got the notice. You're done. You'll never hear another adult guardianship case in the state of Florida. It was amazing when they realized they had been caught, how all of a sudden these judges knew what the law meant.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
It all came to them, huh?
15 years, you don't know what the law means, but when somebody tells you, hey, the AG's investigating and you've been practicing double standards here and you're not going to hear these cases anymore, let me fix that. And I'll tell you, I'm going to get a little sidetracked here, but Marcy, your comment on Judge Pamela Campbell, Judge Pamela Campbell inserted herself in the Terry Schiavo case 20 years ago, the young woman who was allowed to die because her husband didn't want her to be alive so that he could get the money that was tied up with her continuing to live. Pamela Campbell took that experience and exposure to become a judge of Pinellas County. Pinellas County and Hillsborough are two of the hottest spots for guardianship and probate frauds in the entire country. And the atrocities that we continue to hear this very week as she continues to protect Tracy Hudson and all the attorneys who've been paid nearly $1 million in fees from the accounts of the wards that, and only 35, and keep in mind, Tracy Hudson only was awarded about 35 guardianships from when she became a guardian in 2016 until she was arrested in October of 2019.
Wow.
Almost $1 million in fees because the Honorable Judge Pamela Campbell of Pinellas County, Florida, has said she is an angel and must be protected, and her attorneys must be compensated until there's a criminal conviction. Well, guess what? When the money's gone, there is no restitution. These families are continuing to be victimized because that judge and too many more in Florida, as well as the rest of the country, think their only responsibility is to entertain fellow members of the bar at the expense of the public. And I just wish the people that are listening to this, I hope they get as outraged as I know Luann and Ray and Marcy and certainly Hillary and I, because we compare notes several times every day, 7 days a week, on how we can help certain families. But every American needs to understand Cuban immigrants, French immigrants, German immigrants, Mexican immigrants, any American needs to raise this to their state leaders and federal leaders and demand this has to change.
It has to
change. That was a long way of answering your question, Luann, but there's plenty of high fastballs that Colorado could adopt if they really gave a shit. And the reality is, your leadership doesn't, from the attorney general and the governor on down. Exploit at will, members of the bar.
You're exactly right, because we've been in legislation, we've been in front of Supreme Court. They don't give a shit. And I'm going to actually go up there and tell them that every single one of them people are committing crimes when they don't give a shit, you know? So they're going to have to deal with Robin and I raising here. And we have a lot of people now in Colorado. I mean, I've got our army's kind of built up from all these. I've talked over to 200 families myself here, and every one of them is angry. Every one of them is pissed. You know, they are a lot like you guys here in Florida. Keep it up. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, we're keeping it up. We're never going to stop. I'm going to grieve my mother.
Yeah, hold on, Martha. You go ahead first.
I'm going to grieve my mother by helping people, by getting the word out and telling them how they do not deserve to die alone when she didn't want me to leave. She said, what took you so long? And I can go with you now, you know?
Yeah.
And then she died 4 days later. That is cruel. And every time I see someone, I tell them. But I really think I got an idea, because from speaking up to Ray about the Latin builders, if we could, I'm going to see if we can start having a show. When we have the show, if I can get a group of people, like an organization, to join in and listen to it. Pick an organization. If we each pick an organization or a church group and let them know about this, and if they can listen in, that means we're targeting a lot of people, informing and educating a lot of people that may not be listening to the news or may not be watching the I Care A Lot movie or may not be reading the newspaper. Understand? People that are really, when they hear us speak, they will, in our testimonies, then they can really, really grasp it. Because sometimes people say, oh, what did you do if you didn't get your mother? And I go, no, it's not me. It's the court system. That's what it is.
Right.
What? You're doing that? So if we could get, that may be a great idea. I mean, we got to get at least 400 people, like Greg says, to get together in every state about, you know, calling Focus on the Family and let them know what's going on so they can protect their elders.
Right.
Organizations
just build
like
on
that.
Just to build on that, Luann, to your point.
I just want to make a point. Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead, Luann, sorry.
Go ahead, Rick. Go ahead.
Now, to the point that Marcy's making on building a coalition, that would be in Nevada, because I could research records and see every case across the state. 2013, fully digitized, fully accessed, every filing. Every accounting, every inventory. I built our coalition because I could easily identify cases were. Rudy and Rennie North. It came up two or three times in the research, and you're like, there's got to be something going on here. And at that time, there was no reference to Julie Belshi in the records. By the end of 2014, there was. But in Colorado, because they're sealing these records, the only way that you're able to identify other families is by really getting out in local news, in local publications, so that the other victims know that, hey, there's others here. You know, you have 200. I think we have 25 victims in Colorado. And sadly, most of them, after they disappear, and they almost all disappear, the next time the family sees them is ashes in an urn. Pretty demoralizing. The estate's gone.
Yeah.
Here's ashes. It was great taking advantage of your loved one. It's so much more important that you have local outreach throughout Colorado, and that's where I would link in with the ARC, link in with AARP, link in with the National Disability Rights Network, and the Alzheimer's Association, because what we've learned, you've learned, I've learned in multiple cases in Colorado, the state infrastructure will not help these families. They will not lift a finger. But the network of nonprofit advocacy groups that align with us, supporting the disabled, supporting seniors, we've got to do a better job of outreach with those so that we build our ranks faster, because you're only going to get the evidence if the families have obtained it and will share it with you, and only certain family members are going to be able to get access to the information that legitimizes our claims.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I was going to tell you that Channel 7 is working on segment number 3, which is coming out October 8th. On this, and they've interviewed Carolyn Kamek, so she's going to be coming out on there as well. So we've been reaching a lot of people through Channel 7 News out here.
Hey, the thing I would suggest to Jennifer and the Channel 7 folks, when the next time you're talking to her, make sure that when they leave that they're soliciting families to either contact them and they commit to referring those families to you or SEER or, you know, you. I'll leave that
right
to you, because these things have to be local, Luann. But, you know, in Nevada, the big station that really drove this, which was the ABC affiliate and a wonderful woman, Darcy Spears, every time she exited, she was soliciting, call us. If you think you've got a loved one in this position, call us. And I haven't watched Jennifer. I watched her first one. I haven't watched the second one or the third one. But we ought to remind her, solicit. Give them a number that they can call so that we can try to help these families.
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
And she has been giving a lot of numbers, but she needs to say it on the news as well, because I've had a lot of people refer to me. So, yes. And
good,
I've also
good.
Given them referred by Kim Ransom, too, who was also a representative. Kim Ransom, she's been giving me a heads up on people that are calling her as well, so they all end up calling me, which is fine, because I have databases out here in Colorado. But the only way that gets exposure, though, Rick, is by news media. It doesn't go otherwise, you know. That's why it's really good. Hillary was just
it's
on.
Absolutely correct.
Right.
You got to tackle it both ways, both print and TV, local mass media, the channels that people turn on at 6 and 11 every night. But, you know, you've made better progress, Luann, you, me, SEER, AAAPG, there's others. Because I got a wonderful note from Pam Zubek, the writer down in Colorado Springs, on a couple of different things that were happening in the state just this week. So these networks, and, you know, Hillary works to cultivate these every day. You do, Luann, I do. That's what gives us momentum. And we got to continue to build those media networks, both in print and TV, because it's key. It's the catalyst. It gives us a megaphone, a free megaphone that we desperately need.
Sorry, Rick, but to the point where, you know, a few of us had conversations with Heidi Blake from BuzzFeed, right, and gave her a few victims' names. Marcy was included. Rick, obviously, I was. I think you were as well. And I'll tell you something. We heard yesterday Senator Blumenthal mention that BuzzFeed investigative, three different pieces. This guy, Tom Hall, who was the consultant at the Guardianship Task Force thing, who, as I always say, his resume would make Jesus Christ's resume look lacking. He mentioned, you know, the BuzzFeed pieces. So, I mean, we've got to keep doing what we're doing. Obviously, everything and then some. But, you know, these articles have really, I think, have really put a fire up other news agency and news people, because we're getting calls big time. Brittany, yes. but this BuzzFeed, we really do have to thank Heidi. You know,
I helped Heidi Blake quite a bit with names. I mean, her and I were swapping names for a long time, and I was just really happy that she just took it and just ran with it, because it was a huge article. You know, I was really impressed with that. I mean, it was great. So reach out. Like I say, everybody needs to reach out to the media, get your families involved, and don't ever stop speaking about this. And it's not just Brittany, so remember that. Hashtag, it's just not Brittany. And I think that helps a lot, because I put that on everything I do now, you know.
It does.
But, yeah.
Well, you know, I wanted to also say that Facebook helps a lot, because when I posted that my mother passed away, I got over 500 people responding and saying how sorry they were. And so it works. 500 is better than nothing. All those 500 people know about the guardianship scam. And they, you know, so it does work.
Ray, what were you going to say?
I was just going to praise you again, like always. No, what Hillary did at that task force meeting, when she flat out called it and said, don't even create a will. I mean, I think that opens people's eyes. You know, it's like a shock factor. It's kind of like, you know, you want to get their attention, and you want to get their attention in a way that you're talking about the elderly and the young. It could really happen to anybody. I mean, incapacitation or vulnerable adult, I mean, that's a very loose term. I mean, it could be that you broke your leg and you can't drive your car anymore. I mean, anything could happen to put you in this situation. But what I want to do is I notice that I do stumble when people ask me, well, like, how did you get there? And I've been trying to get better at it, and I think tonight I made it a little bit better as far as saying, you know, all it takes is for your loved one to one day, you know, try to drive his car and pull out a gun, and you call the police. You just created a conflict, because now you're the victim. You're the victim, and the court cannot let you become the guardian, because then now you're the victim, and if the attorney's meeting with the accused, you can't be part of the conversation. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that they were talking about.
Yeah,
so I want families to think.
That's craziness.
I want families to think.
And you don't even need to pull out a gun. You can just be going to a doctor's office, and Social Services comes into every case management there, like they did with my sister. They wanted to know everything about my sister, and my sister says, they're trying to guardianize me. I said, I know, but we're not going to let that happen. But just going to a hospital will get you into a guardianship. You have to be careful of everything you do, all the conversations you have out there. And don't think going to court is going to get you justice anymore. It is not.
Let's make one even more basic, Luann. Just going to the wrong attorney to draft your estate documents could be your route to a guardianship.
How sad
that there's no better business bureau for attorneys. The bar will protect every attorney in every state. I mean, we have tested this with bar complaints on numerous occasions in numerous states, and their position, regardless of what their code of conduct says, regardless of what the law says, if they're able to lie and perjure to get a judge to sign an order that blesses those lies and perjury, the bar will approve it too.
Yeah.
So American public needs to understand, if you have a law license and you work as a probate litigator, you have a license to steal as long as you can get a judge to agree with you.
With a gun.
That's pretty easy. That particularly is assault rifle.
I think you should add that to the commercial. That's very well said.
Yeah. Also, Ray, not only do you have a situation where a lawyer may bring a weapon to a legal proceeding, but in a probate situation, if a lawyer is assigned a guardianship, they have the power then at the point where they're going to pick up the ward, their ward, they can have armed escort to go and pick up the word, because all they, when once they have a judge on their side, that judge signs an order, all they have to do is call the police and say, I want you to come and enforce this order that was put down by a judge.
That's right.
And now you've got armed police officers showing up at your house to take you away, just as if you are under arrest, when in fact it's not that at all, but it's the same effect on the victim as being arrested for a crime.
Exactly.
Oh, they
hired
off-duty police in my mother's case. They were charging the estate to hire off-duty police, like my mother and I were some sort of threat. I mean, the money that was coming through there was crazy. But I did want to mention, I did speak to a professor, Drew Stevenson. He's from the Texas Law School down there. He's a former assistant attorney general for Connecticut. Really, really smart guy. I talked to him quite in detail because he created a legal journal that gets published to all the bars, you know, for bars in the state. You know, they go to all different states. And he was trying to explain to the American bar, we need more language. Like, I mean, the topic of the legal journal was the ethics with lawyers openly carrying in legal settings. I mean, that was the headline. I mean, they literally had to make this huge legal journal explaining why it's such a bad idea for lawyers to brandish guns. And from there, I picked up that in Nevada, again, like they actually went after the lawyers that did it. But the fact that they actually have to put something out like that, like that's not common sense, that you shouldn't be flashing a gun or holding a gun or screaming at a woman with a gun. I mean, back to what Marcy was saying, like the law of the land, I love that. I mean, this isn't just the law of the land. It's like the law of the world. I don't care if you're standing in Sri Lanka with a gun screaming at a woman, it means the same thing in that language as it means in our language. I mean, you can be on the moon doing that, and it still has the same effect. But
yeah,
the Florida bar
right.
wants to play stupid and say, oh, no, nothing to see here. I mean, it's unreal. And, you know, you want to use the law of the land. I mean, this is the law of the world, law of the galaxy. You can't threaten people with a weapon.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah, it's scary when you go into a court, nobody is on your side, man, and it doesn't matter. We went in there with my family, and I tell you what, my sister said to me, what happens if that judge says, screw you, and screw you? And I thought, they ain't going to do that. We're going to court. We're going to get justice there. And I tell you what, I sure ate those words in a hurry. And I never forgot that. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, he's right. This can't be happening. It happened, and it can happen to you. So if you're listening to these radio shows, don't think you're exempt from any of this, because it just takes one phone call of your parents, your disabled child, children, or anybody.
A doctor can call.
A doctor.
A neighbor can call. An attorney. Yeah.
But wait a minute, Robin.
Have.
Robin,
a real estate
I am,
agent.
But wait a minute. No? I am like a nut job now, knowing what I know. Whenever I go to Publix, right, I'll say, please, sweet Jesus, let me remember where my car is. But when you see, when you see that woman, they're like, that woman is in the club. She can't find her car. I'm like driving around with her looking for her car, because I don't want someone to see her not being able to find her car and to file a petition to put her in guardianship, you know?
Put it this way. I had a lady that backed out and hit my car, and I went and talked to her, and she wasn't very lucid, and I said, you know what, let's just call this even. And she goes, okay, don't worry about it. And I didn't even want to call the police because I knew they would be guardianizing her. I just knew it. So that's what I do, too. I just, if it's no big deal, just move on and try not to get them guardianized. I'm like, my sister goes, they're going to guardianize her if you call the police. And I'm like, I'm not going to. And my sister says, good,
and there's,
too.
And I want to say there's such a contrast between probate and family and regular civil court, because I do want to give credit where it's due. The stuff I experienced in the last 10 years with judges and attorneys is nothing but stellar. I mean, pure, good-hearted judges, fair, impartial. I mean, they're giving attorneys chances on both sides. And, you know, I worked with a lot of Miami law firms, and they always had a bad reputation because, you know, they said, oh, they're too crazy. But truthfully, you know, these are PI lawyers, so they only got paid if you won. And they put everything into these cases. I had law firms that I worked for that actually didn't even take a fee. They're like, you know what, Miss So-and-so, I'm sorry, the policy limits were what they were. We decided we're not going to take anything. I mean, I work with law firms like that. And, that's why I was real happy.
Uh-huh. Well, I had a couple of pro bono attorneys that were very, very good to me. And, one of them was Willard Shepard he was my pro bono for a while, and he couldn't go to court. So, I got Sandy Boysenrod, and I have to say she was amazing. And she really helped me.
We need to mention all the really good attorneys that have helped our families. We have a Linda Lee that is helping families out here too in Colorado. So we're just going to keep working on this. And let's see, I'll call in some callers. If any of our listeners want to call into the radio show and talk for the next few minutes, I'm going to be bringing in callers, and we're only going to do this for the next few, maybe 10 minutes. The number you call into is 845-241-9962. You press a 1-845-241-9962, and you press a 1. And I've got someone calling in right now. Let's bring in a 505 number. A 505, you have a question, a comment? You are live on the air with
Luann.
Agent. Yeah.
I guess you're talking to me, Luann. This is Lang. We talked earlier.
Yes.
So, enjoyed the show. Thank you so much for sharing. Yes, my mother has been incarcerated into a nursing home against her will. But the main thing I want to bring up is that what we're looking at is this is trafficking of our elders. The Department of Justice needs to get involved and be on top of this because they are the people that have the authority. The Attorney General won't do anything in Colorado. And what we're really looking at in probate, we're dealing with Jefferson County. My case is dealing with Jefferson County. It's nothing but a racketeering enterprise. And I've watched this judge dealing with my mother. My mother passed her psychological evaluation that was court-ordered. Everything in our case has been court-ordered. Her attorney, the guardian ad litem, the guardians. It's not just the guardians. The guardians are appointed by these judges. These judges are holding court, and they have their little minion. They have their little group, their little gang group of attorneys that bring them cases. Remember something. These judges are getting 6 to 8% of the estate value. This is all about money. And my mother was a commander's wife. She was a military commander's wife. She dealt with dignitaries all over the world. This woman right now, once we get her out of there, the reason they want to keep her incarcerated in this nursing home is because once she gets out, she will sit in front of Congress and she will tell them what's going on. She is so bright and so brilliant. Yeah. It's all a lie. It's a scam. It's racketeering. What they are doing, probate is nothing but a racketeering platform using a judicial platform for a racketeering enterprise. And we need to get people... What I would like to do is encourage people to download the RICO, Criminal RICO Manual for Federal Prosecutors. It's an 18 U.S.C. 1961 to 1968. RICO is racketeering, influenced, and corrupt organization. And this will give you everything about racketeering, and it is exactly what's going on in probate. Probate and workman's comp, too. Nothing but a racketeering enterprise, and they are ungoverned benches of the government. These judges that are holding these courts, and they've got their little minions of attorneys and their conservators. Now the conservators need to be audited. They need to be audited, and the states are not auditing these people.
One of our voices in legislation this year, I tell you that much. God.
Well, I'll tell you what. Here's what you find out. It's called PAAR, and there might be an E on the end of it. But that will give you the monies that the judges are making. It's P period A period A period R period, and there might be an E. And this is how you find out what the monies these judges are making on these cases. In our case, I sat there. I filed a recuse against this judge for an 18 U.S.C. 1961-1962 RICO violations of racketeering in his court, and he just ignored it. I also sent it to his chief judge in Jefferson County. Anybody that's listening that's from Jefferson County, we need a class action suit against the state of Colorado. We need more law, how to tell people how to enforce law, because you're right. The attorneys are all in the game. They're not going to do anything. I have talked to 100 attorneys, and I'll promise you, none of them, once I tell them who the opposing counsel was and who the judge is, they've told me, you can't win in his, you cannot win in his court. Is what I've been told, and that the opposing counsel, the guy that was the attorney on my mom's case on the opposing counsel, was also the attorney for the public administrator conservator for Denver County. So these people are all in this racket together.
I already know who you're talking about. I have your phone number, Lang. I have your phone number, and I will talk to you more about this. I want to get to some other callers for the radio show.
Yeah.
Okay. So I will be in touch with you, and we'll talk more about this. Okay. But I know.
And people just need to educate themselves. They need to download the RICO file. It's a 500-page document, but it's a manual for federal prosecutors, and read it, study it, because that's what we have to do. They're not going to do anything for us. We have to this is a feudal court, and we have to take arms up against for ourselves and go in there with people backing us, and that system is going to back down, because once we prosecute these people for what they're doing, they're killing our elders. They're culling us for the estates, for the IRAs, for the pensions, for the all the real estate holdings. They have found the linear line of the baby boomers' gold mine of the rainbow, and they are sucking us dry for everything that our dads. My dad was a military commander. He left my mother in excellent shape to never have to worry about anything, and she has been condemned to a stupid, old folks home. She has no business being
there. More about the case. I'll be talking to you more about this, okay? This case. So call me tomorrow, and we will talk more about this. But I want to get to some other callers, okay?
Yes, RICO and racketeering. It's what we're talking about, and we need to take force against this. Thank you so much. Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
All right.
Luann.
Go ahead, Hillary.
And thank you, Ray. Is it okay if I just, and I won't mention the names, can I just read an affidavit about this gun situation?
Oh, yeah. I was thinking about that. Go right ahead.
I'm going to change the name to prevent retaliation. So this is the affidavit of Jane Garcia. Before me, the undersigned authority personally appeared, Jane Garcia, Esquire, who being fully sworn in, deposes and says, I'm over the age of 18 and have personal knowledge of the facts stated herein. I'm a partner at the law firm of Joe Jane in Jacksonville. I attended a mediation in the matters related to Donald Beatty pending in Polk County, commencing on July 15, 2019. Mediation was being held in the offices of Attorney Miller in Bartow, Florida, at the law firm of Boswell and Dunlop. Several hours into the first day of mediation, July 15th, I was in a hallway discussing the position of my client, Ray's mother, Doris Beatty, with the mediator, David C. Brennan. During our discussion, Mr. Miller came down the hallway holding a firearm and included himself in the discussion. The position I was taking on behalf of my client, Doris, was not in alignment with the position that Mr. Miller was taking. So the conversation was by necessity adversarial. I advised Mr. Miller three times during the conversation that the firearm, the gun, made me very uncomfortable, and I requested that he remove the firearm from my presence.
Mr. Miller refused to cooperate with my request. When my colleague came into the hallway, I heard Mr. Brennan, the mediator, make a comment regarding my partner's apparent discomfort, at which point Mr. Miller walked away from the conversation, holding the firearm by the stock and pointing the barrel of the firearm into the ground. Upon Attorney Miller's departure, I noted to Mr. Brennan that the inclusion of a firearm during an adversarial discussion was inappropriate, and I heard my partner make a similar comment. Can you believe that an attorney, a Florida bar-certified attorney, brought a firearm, a gun, into a mediation, and no one thinks that there's a problem with that?
And that's a sworn affidavit that she can go to jail, perjury. And there's a second affidavit, if you want to read that one too, from her partner, who also submitted it.
Right. So before me, the partner, Jane Doe, again, who is over 18, is an attorney. I attended a mediation in the matters relating to Donald Pete Beatty, pending in Polk County. Mediation was held at the attorney's office, Mr. Miller. Several hours into the mediation, I walked into the hallway and observed my colleague in a hallway with discussion with the mediator, David Brennan, and Attorney Miller. I observed Mr. Miller, attorney, leaning on a long firearm, which was pointed barrel down, with Mr. Miller's forearm resting on the other end of the firearm. Mr. Miller is much taller than Miss Smith, and Mr. Miller appeared to be leaning over the gun towards her. I was uncomfortable with the presence of the gun, but continued to walk towards the group discussion. My discomfort appeared to be obvious as I heard the mediator make a comment about my facial expressions. At that point, Mr. Miller walked away from the conversation, holding the firearm by the stock and pointing the barrel of the firearm into the ground. Upon Mr. Miller's departure, I noted to the mediator, Mr. Brennan, that the inclusion of a firearm during a mediation or any legal setting was inappropriate, and I heard my colleague make a similar comment. Insanity. The Florida bar is just so effed up, and it really is it's a den of thieves, and it's true. They support the bad
ones. He doesn't deny having the gun. He doesn't deny. In his response, he doesn't deny. And another thing I want you to think about, and Marcy will appreciate this, my mother, I don't know if I mentioned this, you know, in Cuba, that firearm, that's what kids would see on government TV on public execution. You know, that exact gun, that's what they would do with firing squad. So in Cuba, you're not allowed to have guns.
Yeah.
So that military single shot gun that he talks about, the only gun my mom ever saw growing up were the guns on TV when they were killing people that were against the political party. So what Keith Miller might have claimed, it's just an old gun, no one should be threatened by this. Well, you know.
And there you have three women, your mother and female attorneys, and correct me if I'm wrong, and they're all, the three of them, strong women. At least
One was a male attorney.
Right. But talk about intimidation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
unbelievable.
I thought, at that point, I thought the whole case was over. I thought we won. I'm like, this case is done. It's over. There's no way you can get out of this. And sure enough, I was wrong. But I want you guys, if you guys know media, you give everybody that affidavit, because I'm never going to stop with that.
Oh, definitely. That's the heavy approval. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
To me, out of all the thousands of documents that have been filed on this case, that's the only one that I want people to look at.
Uh-huh. Right. Yes. Let me bring another caller, 720. You have a question or a comment?
Is this me?
Yeah. Hi.
Yes. Hi. Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Luann. Thank you, Rick Black. I just wanted to, I didn't know if this was touched on the subject today, but Brittany got released today. Is that true?
I don't think her father got suspended.
Her father got suspended for the meantime, and I think Brittany is free. And then, Black, did you watch?
No, David, that's not the case. They released her father from being the conservator, but the conservatorship continues, and there was the typical hocus-pocus, sleight-of-hand arguments so that they can continue to tie up the guardian, the conservatorship in place while the attorneys argue over what they want to do next. So it's the typical ruse played by the attorneys. We were hoping that this new attorney, Matthew Rosengart, would be a little more intentional and zealous to get the whole thing dismissed, but it's obvious in the way he's fighting it that he wants to keep it in there. And his arguments were that he wants to hold James, the dad, accountable. My disappointment in at least everything I heard coming out of the courtroom, there was no discussion on holding the more than a dozen attorneys accountable who kept this charade going for the last 13 years. But no, Britney Spears is still in a conservatorship tonight.
That's so sad.
That's so sad.
Then I wanted to touch upon Senator Ted Cruz and the Judicial Committee. I think we a couple of us watched that yesterday. Really disappointed. I think a lot of us need to reach out to the Judicial Committee, Senator Ted Cruz and the other, I forgot his name, Bill Hammond or something. I think we need to reach out because it was really sugar-coated. Had nothing about the elderly. It was, okay, we have one guy has a brain injury, and as you mentioned before, easy to look up. But nothing about the elderly and the abuse that we're going through, about the abuse of powers that these judges have, abuse of powers, these predatory attorneys. And that was one subject I kind of want to touch on today because that was a judicial committee, and there was two senators there, and they're on a main vote about, I think it was the budget, the fiscal year budget. And I think a lot of us need to reach out to these senators. And yesterday's show was kind of tell me if I'm wrong, Rick. Was that sugar-coated? Did that really bring into light what's really going on? In my opinion, it wasn't.
No, it was sugar-coated. You're correct. You know, we got fairly towards the end. This is David, right?
Not correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Well, yeah, that's both all time now.
Towards the end, I thoroughly enjoyed the candid discussion between Zoe Brennan Crone of the ACLU and Richard Blumenthal. And I tend, although I can be extremely negative, David, I like to look at these experiences as a cup half full. Six months ago, I had attempted to get an alliance with ACLU at headquarters and several other cities, and we have never had engagement with the ACLU. In March of this year, several of us reached out to Zoe, and although she didn't engage, she certainly was listening and then ultimately filed the amicus brief on the Britney Spears case, which is exactly, I believe, why she was invited to speak at the hearing. And I know some, at least one of the briefers who worked with her to get her up to speed on the bigger, broader issues prior to her providing testimony yesterday. And she did a great job. The other woman, Whitlock, I'm trying to think of her first name, Megan or Morgan,
yeah.
Morgan Whitlock.
It was any time we're talking about guardianship, it is good. And you know, we do have a lot of disabled people, you know, Ramon Omar Rojas, Thomas Booker, so many. We get that. But I do have to agree with our caller. I was disappointed that the elderly community weren't really mentioned. We weren't talking about elderly people, how they are taken from their homes and put into fraudulent guardianship. And so I agree, but hopefully that'll be one of many hearings concerning conservatorship.
Yeah. Hey, let's bring on one more caller, a 407 number. You have a question or a comment, make it pretty brief because we've only got a few minutes left of the show. 407?
Yes. Yes. I have a quick question.
Go ahead.
I'm going to call in. Can you hear me?
Yes, and I know who this is. Hello.
Okay, I'm going to call him another night with a more lengthy presentation. But just on the cusp of things from what I'm hearing, is it futile in a guardianship that's almost ready to go in for the kill shot? Is it futile to ask to switch judges because they're all on the same network? I mean, is that useless to try to do?
Rick?
Yeah,
I tried. I tried to switch judges, and we brought it into a magistrate court. The GAL recently went behind our back, and we had no notice to us, and bring it back into the original judge. It's usually sleight of hand, sleight of fist. They didn't recognize us, and we didn't have any notice. Back to the original judge as of Tuesday.
There you go.
Okay. Thanks. Thank you.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Wow. Okay. One more number popped up. Yeah. 863. Yeah. Do you have a question or a comment real quick?
Yes. Yes, I do. Hello.
Okay.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yes.
Welcome to the show. Uh-huh.
Hi. I have a question about this Keith Miller that held him two guns at two separate times. Did he actually fire the gun in his office? And the bullet went to floor or somewhere?
No. And it was It was just the police.
Yeah.
Okay.
They just bring guns in with them and they're not supposed to, right?
Okay. I was just wondering because if he did fire it, it could ricochet and hit somebody, his secretary or somebody who works with him or anybody. It could kill somebody.
Yeah.
But
it's very dangerous.
Just the point, and I believe, if I could say something, I believe I know who you are. And,
yes, ma'am.
And you know Keith Miller, and maybe if it's okay with you, tomorrow or the next time I speak to Ray, I will mention that you have a family member and Keith Miller is involved, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah,
and
so another.
Keep putting them together, that's all I say. Yeah. Also,
horrific.
You. I'll give you her number too. I think you might have it. Okay. 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 So. Wow, this has been an interesting conversation tonight, and gosh, we thank all of our listeners and all of our guests.
Thank you.
Rick Black, thanks for coming on a short notice, and Ray, you know. You are turning out to be a pretty big voice down there, along with Hillary, along with Marcy. Rick Black is down there. And, of course, Doug Frank, Sue Melendi is down there. There's a lot of really good advocates forming down there in Florida, and we need to form them in every state. Every single state needs to be involved, media involved. You need to reach out to as many people as you can, and just don't ever stop talking about the problems going on in the probate and how they're isolating, not just for elders, but anybody that becomes disabled adults, children, anybody. You can have your rights taken away in a probate court just like that, regardless if you have a trust, a will, any kind of document. Sometimes in these courts, it does not matter what you have, as Ray Contreras has told us tonight. It doesn't matter. So thank you, Ray, for coming on tonight. Hillary, as well. Marcy, Rick Black.
I want to make an announcement.
Thanks, Luann.
Can I make a quick announcement? I just got a text message that says, please watch the Daily Gospel. Wait a minute. Oh, shoot, he just went. Wait a minute. Give me 1 second. Oh, gosh.
Okay.
I was
thinking about Lang Burnett comment about all of us getting together and file a federal federal criminal complaint. Because if you're in Florida and we're in Colorado and Rick's in North Carolina, we can all file a federal civil complaint all on the same ticket.
There you go.
That's a good idea. I wanted to let you know that somebody just sent me that the daily, that today, it was today on the Daily News, Daily Gospel Network, today at 4:30 Eastern Time, and the Now Network on Thursday at 4 p.m., there's going to be a campaign about guardianship and elder abuse.
There you go. Keep the momentum going out there, you know, just keep working it, everybody.
It's going to be in the Now Network on Thursday, which is tomorrow at 4 p.m.
Okay, you guys let me know. You guys post it out there. You can reach us. If you want to reach me anytime for the radio show, if you want to tell your story, you reach me, Face Us Radio, FACEUS Radio at hotmail.com. Tell us what you think of the radio show. Talk to us. Let us know how we're doing. Talk to us. Just don't ever stop talking about this horrific thing that's going on. Robin, do you have anything you want to say?
I just wanted to mention, I haven't had a chance to review it yet or see it yet, but I did notice that the documentary that Netflix was doing about Britney is live.
Britney versus Spears is on Netflix.
Right.
Yes, Britney versus Spears. We haven't seen it yet. It's supposed to be coming out tonight or tomorrow, so I'm going to be watching that as soon as we can. But all this is really good news that this is helping us move this even further. Thank you, Rick Black, for coming on as well.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lorraine. We are ready to go ahead.
And Robin, if I could take your
thank
line,
you, Robin.
If I could say it tonight, justice requires transparency.
And accountability.
And
there
it's law of the land.
Never give up.
The law of the land.
Thank you.
Good night, everyone.
There you go,
thanks
everybody.
So good
night.
Good night.
We'll see you again next
good week. Night, Heather, everybody. Bye, Dwayne.
Yeah, good night, everybody.
Did you know that elders and others are losing their rights to liberty and property? Anyone can petition a court to have a person deemed incapacitated. What if that person is you? The adult guardianship system was created to protect incompetent people and their assets. A court-appointed guardian, sometimes a total stranger, can force you into a nursing home and sell your home to pay for services. Treasured belongings can disappear as you are drugged and isolated from loved ones. Why does this happen? Unfortunately, the courts don't have the funding to supervise and audit cases. A guardian makes all decisions on your behalf, taking control of your assets with little accountability. The potential for abuse is frightening. Luckily, not all guardians exploit those under their care, but when they do, there's really nowhere to go for help. The National Association to Stop Guardian Abuse, NASGA, is working to reform adult guardianship to return it to its once noble purpose of protecting the human rights to life, liberty, and property and ending financial exploitation of assets. Are you or your loved ones protected? To learn more, visit StopGuardianAbuse.org.